Well, good afternoon and welcome to another live transfer Q&A with myself, Steve Jones, and our Blades correspondent, James Shield. We are hoping to have Danny Hall with us as well, but we'll see how we go on that one. We're live on Facebook and Twitter, so if you're watching on Facebook, you can submit questions and we'll get through them. Hopefully, James, you can do a better job of answering them than Boris Johnson a little bit earlier today. Jim, first piece of business, finally. Danny, welcome, by the way. Michael Verrips has left, back to Holland, loan with a view to a permanent transfer. Is that a good deal all round, do you think?
Yeah, I'll try not to obfuscate quite as much as our, venerable PM, Steve, but possibly, well, listen, we won't go into the politics, will we? I think I've made mine pretty clear in various columns over the years. But yeah, I think it is. I think it is a good deal for Michael Verrips. It's a good deal for Sheffield United. Whether or not it turns out to be a good deal for Fortuna Sittard, the club he's joined on loan, will depend, of course, on the player's form there. But listen, I think it's fair to say that Michael's time at Sheffield United has not gone as either he or the football club would like. He made his feelings pretty clear when he went out on loan to FC Emmen last season. He accused United of breaking sort of some unofficial promises to him that he would take part in key games. He's clearly not a happy player. I think it's fair to say, and I'm not saying he's a bad footballer, but certainly for Sheffield United, he's clearly not been an effective player. He's not played enough games, and his last appearance for the in the starting 11 at West Bromwich Albion was pretty much a disaster. I think everyone who watched that would admit as much. So yeah, I think it's a good opportunity for Michael to try and rebuild his career, and I think it's a good opportunity for Sheffield United to begin reprofiling their squad, because for once it doesn't just kick the can down the road. There is an option to buy within this agreement as well. So yeah, I think all good for everybody concerned.
Danny, staying on the goalkeeper front, he's done a story this morning about some reported interest in Robin Olsen from Aston Villa. Again, same question, would that be a good move all round, given his fortunes since joining the club?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, just to touch back on Michael, if you don't mind, I know I was late into the call, so apologies for that. I think it'll turn out to be a good move for United's other goalkeepers as well, because you know he was on a long contract when he signed for Sheffield United. When he and that, his kind of presence in the goalkeeper department, I think it kind of blocked up that pathway, didn't it, for a couple of the younger players. We've seen Jake Eastwood, who's been on the bench in recent weeks. You know, Marcus Dewhurst is really highly rated. Jordan Amissa, you know, and with three senior keepers there, you know, that pathway was very much blocked up, wasn't it? So I think it'll be a good move for those as well to kind of free up a little bit of a pathway to the first team squad. And, you know, Michael as well, to be fair to him, has had some damn good goalkeepers in front of him, hasn't he? You know, when he arrived with Dean Henderson between the posts, and then Aaron Ramsdale came in, and then Robin came in this season. So it's not been the, as James touched on there, right, it's not been the career at Sheffield United that he would have wanted when he signed. You know, it's not been the player that Sheffield United would have wanted when he signed. So I think a fresh start for everyone could only be a good thing. On Robin, Aston Villa are interested in him, reportedly. Another player who's not hit the heights that were expected of him when he signed for Sheffield United. You know, I think when Aaron was sold and Robin came in, I think, you know, most Sheffield United fans would look to that and gone, you know, that's a fair old signing. That's a bit of a coup to get the current, you know, Sweden number one, you know, playing for a club like Roma. Fair enough, not, you know, necessarily being in the team, but just being at a club like that with his Premier League experience last season as well. I think a lot of fans, would look at that and go, you know what, United have done quite well there. Whether that's panned out, you know, as many people thought it would, perhaps not. But, you know, if he does leave, I think it's imperative, you know, that someone is brought in, because, you know, with Michael leaving as well and Jake being the, you know, de facto number two goalkeeper now, with Robin injured, you know, there's not a lot of strength in that department, is there? And you know, as good as Wes has been, you know, there were signs at Wolves when he literally dropped the ball, you know, that he's not exactly the they finished article either. So I think, you know, it's imperative that whether Robin's, you know, if Robin does go back to Roma and then goes elsewhere, I think it's very important to get, bring someone in to replace him.
Taking the financial considerations out of this, which I know is a ridiculous thing to say because every football club's got to look at its balance sheet. But personally, I think it would be a terrible move to see Robin Olsen leave. And I say that because, listen, he's not had the start to his career at Bramall Lane that I think either Robin or Sheffield United would have liked, or indeed the supporters. But he's still a damn good goalkeeper. You don't end up winning more than 60, nearly 70 caps, I think it is, for your country. You don't end up playing for clubs like Everton, FC Copenhagen, you know, Roma, without being a damn good goalkeeper. And let's scroll back 12 months. I remember we were having exactly the same conversations about Aaron Ramsdale, you know. And things haven't turned out too badly for him, have they? He's now Arsenal's number one. He's now looks as if he's going to be England's number one in the not so distant future. So form is temporary, class is permanent. Robin Olsen is a class goalkeeper. We haven't seen that yet, but he is. And if Sheffield United are going to achieve anything this season, they're going to need competition for places. And serious, genuine competition. That's how they'll get the best out of Wes Fodringham if he stays in goal. That's how they will eventually get the best out of Robin Olsen if he remains at the football club. And again, this isn't a dig. This is just a statement of fact. Sheffield United do not move quickly or quickly enough for many, myself included, in the transfer market. And I think the last thing they want to be doing is that we've already seen they're having problems, not just, you know, not necessarily through any fault of their own, but a centre-half should have already come in. They don't want to be waiting to the end of the transfer window. I don't buy this argument that you get better value at the end of a transfer window. They looked at James Hill. AFC Bournemouth have brought him in very early in the window. I'm pretty certain that AFC Bournemouth will think that they've got better value for money out of the deal than Sheffield United did. Because, yes, they spent £1 million in him, but they've got a player that they wanted and they've addressed a problem within their squad. So I don't think Sheffield United want to be going out at this time when they desperately need a centre-half. They may well need bolstering in a couple of other positions, depending on what happens during this window, and then adding a new goalkeeper to the mix as well. Because if Robin does go, or they allowed him to go, or he was lured elsewhere, that's just another need added to the list of things that they already need to do. And disruption's no good thing. You want as many quality players as possible at your football club. And Robin Olsen is a quality player.
Just a reminder, we're live on Facebook. So if you've got any questions and comments, get them in. James, I think you'll like this one. It's slightly cynical. Someone's...
I don't know what you mean, Steve.
Someone's predicted the whole narrative of the window is going to go something like this. We're working on a couple, but it'll be more like the end of the window. So should we all just go, get back to our jobs for a few more weeks yet?
Well, hopefully not. But listen, and again, obviously, as you've said there, I know I can be cynical old so-and-so at times.
I didn't say that exactly.
But listen, the reason why people are cracking jokes like that is because that's the way that the past couple of transfer windows have worked. You know, supporters aren't stupid. They see what goes on at their football club. And that's why people are coming up with lines like that. I can understand. I think it's important to place this window in context. I'll try and be sort of serious and fair, as I always try to be. People might not always agree with me. I know they don't. But, you know, there's a reason why people have an opinion, and that's because they think theirs is right. Although very frequently I am wrong. But I think it's important to put this window in context. COVID and the financial problems that have been caused at many football clubs by that, and the problems that have been caused on the fixture calendar, I do think means this window will be a little bit slower than others. And I can totally understand that. We've already heard Paul Heckingbottom talking about, yes, I need to reprofile the options at my disposal, but I also can't afford to leave myself short of numbers because we've got an awful lot of games coming up. And I totally accept that. And I think, you know, we've got to be fair and recognise that those all of those circumstances combined mean that progress might not be across the board, might not be as fast as we would like during this window. But I will say Sheffield United do need to do their business as quickly as possible. We've already got a potential problem at centre-half this weekend. We'll find out a little bit more about whether Jack Robinson's available, whether John Egan is available for selection when we speak to Paul Heckingbottom tomorrow. But, you know, as much as football clubs do have to deliver value for money in the transfer market, and Sheffield United are absolutely right to try and do that, they also need to deliver results on the pitch as well. And I still go back to something that we said right at the start of Slavisa Jokanovic's reign. I thought in the end, Sheffield United did some really good business during the August transfer window. Putting my concerns about most of that business being on loan aside, I thought they brought in some really good players. The only problem was, because they came in at the end of the window, they'd effectively given Bournemouth and Fulham a 10-point head start. So there's no value for money there. There's no sort of, you know, balancing the financial and sporting considerations there, is there? And they, you know, they're already in a position whereby I think the signs are really encouraging. But they're 13th in the table, albeit, yes, they've got four games in hand on sixth place. But they need to win those games. And the whole complexion of those matches now is going to be very different if they were playing them in real time, if you get my drift. You know, the pressure on a team, knowing that we have to win those to sort of claw back that gap. It does. It just changes the whole atmosphere and mood, both before the games and actually during those in-game situations. And they need to get players in now. They don't want to wait until the end of the window, but oh dear me, you know, because we only had one centre-half at our disposal, we've passed up the chance to claw six of those points back. They've got to do it as quickly as possible. But I do accept that, you know, it's not just Sheffield United's decision, because, you know, if they're bringing in a player from somebody else, you also have to have that player's club agreeing to do the deal. So I do accept that, but they need to move quickly for Paul Heckingbottom's sake and the team's own promotion hopes.
Another question. Has Basham been offered a new contract? And if not, come on, United, get him one to sign. Danny, can you shed any light on that one?
Not beyond what we've already reported, really, no. Bash wants to stay. Paul Heckingbottom wants him to stay. But as yet, that new contract's not been signed. We asked Bash this question last week. He's at a loss as to why that's not been sorted out yet. Paul Heckingbottom put a little bit of meat on the bones in terms of talking about different budgets for different divisions. So there's a bit of forward planning there. But yeah, I would expect that to get done at some point. I mean, Bash has got a clause in his contract that entitles him to a extension where he plays a certain number of games anyway. That looked in jeopardy a little bit early in the season when he wasn't in the team, when Slavisa was playing a back four. Now, Paul's gone back to a three and Bash is very much back in the team and pretty much United's only senior fit and available centre-half at the minute. It looks like he'll trigger that clause. So that's good news. But yeah, for everyone around the club, I think, you know, tying Basham down to a new contract, I think it's vitally important, not just for what he brings kind of on the pitch, as, you know, as good as he is on the pitch, you know, that kind of heartbeat of the team and the squad. You know, we speak to players about, you know, they always mention him about being, you know, in behind the scenes and the, you know, keeping the spirits high and all that kind of stuff, you know, which I think is very important. And yeah, I think for everyone concerned, it's important to get him tied down. But I get the feeling that it's one of those that will just happen almost naturally, if that makes sense, rather than, you know, any great urgency, which as long as it gets done, I think it'll be a good day for everyone at Sheffield United when he extends his stay.
Yeah, I think you're right, Danny. I think it will get done just by the number of games that he plays. But reading between the lines, well, you don't need these to do it either. You can tell what the situation is. The manager's told the player he wants him to stay. The player has told the manager that he wants him to stay, but I'm guessing that no, reading between the lines of what Paul Heckingbottom told us, no official deal has actually been presented to Chris Basham. And I'm guessing it probably won't be until such time that he triggers that clause within his existing contract, or Sheffield United have an idea about what division they're going to be in next season. What I hope they're actually doing, though, is saying to Chris, listen, here's the deal anyway that we're proposing to give you. This is what you'll be on if we're still in the Championship, and this is what we'll be on if we're in the Premier League. Do you accept that? It's not that difficult to do, but I'm guessing that's what the situation is.
Okay, let's have another question. Justin Rice, this is kind of two questions in one, really. Well, the first part, any progress on defenders coming in? James, I know you've written a fair bit on John Souter at Hearts. What's the latest as far as you understand that one?
Yeah, I mean, the situation is there's a slightly smaller pack of clubs apparently now chasing John. It looks as if Stoke City would have been interested in him. Their interest is waning, supposedly, so I've been told a little bit. I think they still are monitoring him, but, you know, potentially there's one less competitor for John's signature there for Sheffield United to battle with. I think it looks as if the three clubs who are really serious about signing John are Sheffield United, of course, Blackburn Rovers and Rangers. I think there's obvious attractions for joining Rangers. I mean that with no disrespect to United or Rovers, but, you know, there's the chance of European football. I think it's a pretty cast iron guarantee that if you go there, you'll finish your career with the fair few medals, which is obviously attractive for a professional. And what Rangers will do is they've obviously just banked 16 million quid from Everton for Nathan Patterson. Really good young player, by the way, there. And they'll look to use some of that money to overcome some of the financial handicaps they face and make it less attractive for John to move into the Championship, into the English Championship, because obviously his representatives feel that they'll get a better salary for him there, that their clients, will earn more. But Rangers will use some of that money they've received to try and sort of redress that balance a little bit. I think ultimately, as it does with any transfer, with most footballers, with most transfers, it will just come down to money. I think all three of the clubs who are interested in John can offer him something on the footballing front, slightly different things, but they're all really attractive options. So I think it will come down to who offers to pay him the most. And it's important to recognise, you know, that's no slight on John Souter and his representatives there. You know, this is possibly, at 25 years of age, I think he is, this is possibly the big contract, the most lucrative contract that he's going to sign as a footballer. So, you know, of course, money is going to come into consideration.
Yeah. This question is...
It was almost a direct role reversal for me of what we spoke about last week about James Hill, you know, with clubs interested in Chelsea and Liverpool, those kind of people. You know, if United were to stand the chance, it would come down to the player's ambitions in terms of if he wants to go and earn a few quid, United won't be in that market. If he wants to develop his football career, then they would be in the market. And that's almost a role reversal, isn't it? Because if he wants to go for the football side of things, and to win things, as James rightly says, then he goes to Rangers. If he wants to earn, it's almost we talked about this on Sunday, weren't we, James? It's almost a strange conundrum in Scottish football where he can come to, again, with respect, Sheffield United or Blackburn, and earn more money than he would at a club like Rangers, because that's just how football in this country and money in this country in football works, isn't it? So it's almost a role reversal in that United will be hoping for once, I would imagine, that the player is actually fancying earning a few more quid over winning trophies and, you know, earning medals, because, you know, for once, United are in a position where they can maybe exploit that. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting one to keep an eye on. I think it's just interesting how that's all turned around in the space of a week, and United are now thinking, hopefully, it goes for a few quid, which, as James said there, you know, you can't begrudge people that. You know, it makes me laugh when you see people having a pop at football as always, just chasing the money. You think, well, as we all would, you know, obviously there's limitations to that, but on the whole, you know, it is a job for these, for people, you know, as much as this is for us. So if they can go in a salary trouble or salary elsewhere, then I always think, well, good luck to them.
Fair point, yeah. Where's McBurnie and Moose is the second part of this three-part question. James, injuries, form, potential outgoings, none of the above?
Lees, I'm going to be totally honest here. I'm not entirely sure. we've asked on a couple of occasions and never really got an answer on that. So I'm guessing, again, an educated guess that Sheffield United just don't quite fancy him at the moment, the new regime, which is a shame, but that's, you know, that's the way I read that situation. Ollie, I'm not being sarcastic here, seems to have had more brushes with COVID-19 than someone who's doing a 20-hour-a-day shift 7 days a week at a testing centre. So I think it's fair to say that, you know, this is something that we've touched on in the paper, actually. I think it's fair to say that we all probably know what his vaccine status is, because certainly, if I think from memory, there's two matches quite a way apart that he's missed because we were told it was down to sort of isolation guidelines. So I think that's pretty much, yeah, that question answered.
Do you anticipate those guys leaving potentially? Danny,
this window. You broke up there, sorry.
Apologies. Do you anticipate either of those guys potentially leaving this window?
I think if an offer came in, I think they'd consider it. I think they'd be foolish not to. I think, as you know, we touched on before, with most transfers, it comes down to what's being offered, isn't it? Moose is slightly different because I believe his contract's up this summer, if that's right, James, from memory.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
All the years in the last couple of years seem to have merged into one. But yeah, I believe his contract's up in the summer, so that would be a different proposition if one came in, you know, in terms of maximising the value versus what you can get out of him in the last half of the season. I did notice on Instagram that he's posting a few videos of him hard at work, so whether that's a clue of, you know, how, you know, if he's going to be coming back from some kind of injury, I don't know. But yeah, with McBurnie as well, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because we talked earlier about players who have not fulfilled the potential at Sheffield United. You could very much level that at Ollie as well, couldn't you, for the money that he cost and the, no doubt, the wages that he's on, you know, to not even be, the last time he even played for Sheffield United, I can't think of the top of my head when it even was. So whether United are getting the value for money out of him that they think they deserve is a different question. But yeah, I think if there is an offer that came in for either in this window, I think United would seriously look at it. But with both players, you know, there is a player in there. We've seen it in the past. We've seen glimpses of it with Moussa in the Premier League. Ollie McBurnie was the top scorer in his first season here. So there obviously is potential there. And it's balancing that potential, I suppose, you know, even though they're not young men anymore. But we do know they have that in the locker. But whether it's ever going to be seen at Sheffield United, and whether, you know, it'd be the most Sheffield United thing ever for both players to leave. Moussa to score 30 goals somewhere next season, somewhere in Europe. But Burnley to go probably to Swansea, score 25, take them up, and then become a £30 million player again. That'd be a very Sheffield United thing to happen. So, yeah, I think it'll depend on if any offers come in. I think they'll be considered. And then it's a risk versus reward question, isn't it?
Moussa, I'm gonna, you know, reveal an interest here in this. I really like Lees as a lad, and I know we're fortunate to sort of get this access, or we were before COVID, to players. But I really wish more people sort of, you know, bumped into Lees, as it were, because he's a really, really nice guy. So I like him. I've written this on numerous occasions. I love him as a player, even though he's possibly the one that frustrates me more than anybody else at the football club, purely because we don't see what he's capable of on a regular enough basis. Listen, clearly the club has got some financial pressures. You don't have to be a forensic accountant to work that out. So I suspect, you know, Sheffield United would look to do business with the league. So I think his time's gone now, because when a football club's like that, it's very difficult to make a case, no matter what their potential is and no matter what a player's ability is, to keep someone who plays so intermittently. I get that. I think Ollie, and let's just move backfield a little bit. I think the same thing can be said for Sander Berge in midfield. I think Sheffield United need to decide what Ollie is. Is he a target man? I think the answer to that is no, personally. But people who have forgotten more about football than I would ever know thought it was. Maybe that was when, again, if you put that decision into context, when Sheffield United were in the Premier League, they felt they needed someone who could bring a little bit of physicality up top, and that Ollie was best equipped to do that. Yeah, I can see that argument. But I don't think Ollie's a target man. I think Sheffield United will get the best out of Ollie McBurnie when they realise that he's not a target man and don't expect him to play as one, because I think that takes away from everything that Ollie is good at. And I think although Ollie can provide that sort of physicality up top, I don't think the amount of physicality he provides, I don't think that balance between, you know, the physicality he brings and what it takes away from other areas of his game really makes that a viable option in my eyes. The one thing I will say is, in terms of Ollie, and I agree with everything that Danny said, but I think it's important to make this point. I think Ollie McBurnie has already paid back that transfer fee to Sheffield United, because he was a part of that team, and a big, big part of that team, that took them to ninth in the Premier League during their first season in the top flight and brought in another year's worth of Premier League money into the football club. So I think Ollie's already paid back his transfer fee and provided Sheffield United with value for money.
Moving on to the final question. Oliver Burke and Regan Slayer are two guys who have been linked with moves away. Is there an update on those guys and where they're at? Danny, should we start with you on that one?
Ollie came off the bench on Sunday. And I thought he showed, it was only a little cameo, but I thought he showed little glimpses of what he's capable of. I think it was a good cross for Billy and his chance. He's just such a frustrating footballer, isn't he? You know, we spoke earlier about the frustrations with Lees, you know, in terms of ability and the raw attributes. You know, Ollie Burke is right up there, isn't he, in this division? But it's just not quite clicked for United. He was talking about going to Blackburn, Tony Mowbray, whether he's playing that down deliberately or, you know, trying to play a longer game. Ease came out and said that he doesn't know where that's come from. And either way, I don't think Ollie would be allowed to leave just yet anyway. Paul Hakenbottom alluded to that last week when he said, you know, we have a hell of a lot of games coming up in these next few, you know, months or whatever. We need to look after ourselves and make sure that, you know, we're looked after, because, you know, United are not here to facilitate other teams. You know, they're here to look after themselves. That, of course, has to be balanced against, you know, his wages and getting some cash in and spending that in other areas. So that's a difficult one. And with Regan, obviously, you know, I think James is probably a better place to discuss that than me, having spoken to him recently. I would imagine that he'll be allowed to leave. Again, that pathway is blocked for him, isn't it? And he's a player who's, having had that experience, you know, on loan at Hull and then winning the title. I think they won the league title that year. Played so many games and being such a big part of it. To come back and then be an under-23s player again, with no disrespect to Regan, that's his status at the minute, because, that, you know, he's playing for the under-23s. I think that's a big adjustment, isn't it? So he'll want to get out there again and prove himself all over again, I suppose. So I imagine that he would welcome a move, you know, away from his club, as difficult as that would be, you know, to move away from the club you've supported. Sometimes you have to put your career first, don't you? So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if either of them moved on. But I think, you know, United are doing the right thing in kind of keeping the powder dry for the minute and saying, you know, we have to do this when it's right for us, not for anyone else.
Yeah, with Regan, listen, I mean, his ideal option, clearly. And he said this very explicitly in the piece that I did with him just before Christmas. You know, his ideal, his number one option would be to play football for Sheffield United. He's a Sheffield born player. He's a Sheffield United fan as a kid, still is, always will be. But, you know, again, he's another player whose contract is up at the end of the season. Sheffield United have shown no signs of wanting to extend that deal, or indeed even into sort of enter into discussions about that. So what's the player and his agent expected to think? You know, I mean, I know what I would take if I was in Regan's position, and that would be that, you know, they probably want me to move on, and my time here is up. He needs to be playing. He deserves to be playing. And I'm sure he'll go on to have a really successful and fruitful career elsewhere. But yeah, I would expect him to leave. Ollie Burke, I think it's interesting, as Danny referenced, what Tony Mowbray said about Ollie Burke. I don't know where that came from. Obviously, with that, he was referring to the link in the media between Ollie and Blackburn Rovers. I think the one thing that he didn't say was, I am not interested in Oliver Burke.
Nice note to end it on anyway. Nice and cryptic. That brings us to a close for today, but we'll be back later in the week for our regular podcast. In the meantime, you can stay up to date with the latest news from Bramall Lane at the Stars website. Thanks for listening and take care.